billions of dollars it gives to Egypt.
Yes, the U.S. should stop cozying up to General, now President Sisi. He is presiding over the worst crackdown in modern Egypt history, much worse than anything that happened under Mubarak. As your colleague noted, there are 22 journalists in prison right now. There are 40,000 political prisoners. The U.S., nonetheless, is just opening the spigots for military aid. It's selling equipment. It's sending the message that we'll live with this dictator because he's pro-American, pro-Western. That is a disastrous message for the Egyptian people.
Should the U.S. cut off aid?
Absolutely. It should never have resumed the aid. It resumed the aid because ostensibly Egypt is on a transition to democracy. But I think John Kerry is the only person in the world who sees that transition.
Ken Roth, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of Human Rights Watch. And Sharif, thanks for joining us from Cairo. Sharif Abdelkaddous, Democracy Now! Correspondent in Egypt. That does it for the broadcast. Very happy birthday to Hani Massoud. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermin Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. DemocracyNow.org is our website.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with our host, Cecil Prescott. Today's guests are Amy Ruiz, Project Manager of Portland's Community Oversight Advisory Committee, Kathleen Sadat, Community Liaison Team Facilitator, and Committee Member Roger Jimmy Johnson. We're going to talk about police oversight in our community.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Other September 11th, film screening and discussion about the lasting impacts of the U.S.-funded military coup in Chile on September 11th, 1973. The event will take place on Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. at the Fifth Avenue Cinema in Portland. This film screening will include two 30-minute documentaries that focus on Mapuche land reclamation and language revitalization, as well as a discussion with the filmmaker about the specific laws that have been used to target the indigenous Mapuche people since the dictatorship began in 1973. Again, that's The Other September 11th on Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. at Fifth Avenue Cinema, 510 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. Lights, Camera, Action, a collaboration between PDX Tech for Good and Portland Community Media. This seminar will show you how to make high-quality video for outreach and fundraising using the cutting-edge technology available at Portland Community Media. Again, that's Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Black History Heroes and Legends, a three-day event from September 11th through 13th. The keynote speaker for this 20th anniversary celebration will be Mr. Les Pee Wee Harrison. And other speakers include Imani Muhammad, Mike Crenshaw, Jamo Greenidge, and more. That's Oregon Black History Heroes and Legends, September 11th through 13th, at venues across Portland. Location, speakers, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, and 104.3 in Corvallis. KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday, August 31st, 2015, and we are hearing music in our headphones. I hope it's not going out over the air. Okay. Welcome. Celeste is unable to be here, but I am joined by three fascinating people who will introduce us and share with us the work of the committee that they are part of. Joining us this morning are Jimmy Johnson, member of the Community Advisory Oversight Advisory Board, Amy Ruiz, who is the project manager, and Kathleen Sadat, who is
the liaison and chair.
Liaison and chair. Thank you. I wasn't quite sure of your title.
Me either.
And after we begin our discussion, we would certainly invite your for you to participate in our conversation. So our numbers are 503-231-8187, and you may also email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. But don't call us right away. Let's begin our conversation and have our guests share something of the work that they are doing, and then we will entertain your questions and comments. So thank you all for joining me this morning. And maybe we'll begin with Kathleen, since you are the liaison and chair. So what is COCL COAB?
We pronounce it COCL.
Oh, see. I'm beginning to learn COCL.
This is a little bit of a complicated explanation, but in 2011, a suit was brought against the city of Portland by the United States Department of Justice. And it had to do with the use of excessive force as it related to our police officers working with the mentally ill. Out of that suit was developed a settlement agreement. That is, the city, first they acknowledged that there are many good police officers in our city, but that there was a problem, but the city didn't acknowledge any responsibility in that. However, the settlement agreement lists close to 200 items for implementation by the Portland Police Bureau. That is, to change the way they behave, to look at policy, to look at procedure. As a part of the settlement agreement, one of the unique things about this agreement is that they established a community oversight advisory board. And that was a vehicle to be able to have community members comment on policy, comment on procedure, give information on what they thought would help things be better. Okay. As a part of the process, the city also hired a firm that would look at implementation over time and report back on success or gaps in the implementation. That's the COCL. That's the consultant group out of Chicago. The local COCL is made up of three people, Mandy Hood, Amy Riz, and myself. And we're responsible for taking care of the COAB, the Community Advisory Board, and acting as liaison to the many parties involved in all this, including the Albina Ministerial Alliance, the mental health agencies, the city police bureau, etc. So that's the package, and that's what we do. Now, the Community Advisory Board, first of all, it's important to say that this experiment, because it is an experiment on the part of the Department of Justice, is unique to Portland and is being looked at as perhaps a model for other places in the country. So it's a real opportunity for Portland to model a behavior or set of behaviors that will actually make a difference in our police department if we will take a look at policy, because that's where change occurs. the noise that we make, and some people have been really consistent and wonderful in bringing this to the attention of Portlanders and the U.S. government. Among them, AMA, Joanne Hardesty, Copwatch, other groups that have really participated, and the mental health groups that have participated in this, they've all brought this to the attention of people. Now we have people's attention. We have to do the work of looking at those things that actually shape the institution. So the advisory board monitors the implementation of the City of Portland settlement agreement with the United States Department of Justice. And the reform of policies and the training that's being done. So that's what we're looking at. We have 15 voting members on our committee, and then there are 5 non-voting police officers who are advisors to the committee. And I'm the chair to that committee. What we do, and this is a list here, basically, independently assess the implementation of the settlement agreement, make recommendations to the parties and the COCO on additional actions, advise the chief of police and the police commissioner on strategies to improve community relations, provide the community with information on the settlement agreement and its implementation, contribute to the development and implementation of a Portland Police Bureau Community Engagement and Outreach Plan. That's the CEO plan. And Jimmy, who's here this morning, is responsible for the committee. He is the chair for the committee that is focused on that plan. And Amy, who is here this morning, is the person who is working with Jimmy and that committee to help them develop the plan, plan to plan, and then develop the plan. We are also responsible for receiving public comment and concerns. There's a limit to what we can do about individual grievances against the police. We want to hear very, very much from people who have ideas on what could be done. Do we need to, we need to hear from people about what they think will help things change.
So in terms of policy, overall policy, rather than individual concerns.
Yeah, we already know there's a problem or there wouldn't be a settlement agreement. Mm-hmm. So the investigation has happened. So we're not reinvestigating anything. We're saying, okay, we've got a problem. Come on, folks, tell us what you think we should do about it.
So this settlement agreement, which is, you know, 77 pages, and I'm sure all three of you are know each line in detail, but in terms of general, could you give us a brief executive summary of the settlement agreement? Perhaps you, Amy?
Well, it has many different sections. So there's sections on the police accountability system, the training, use of force are three of the really big ones. There's an entire section, too, on this community engagement piece, which is what the Community Oversight Advisory Board is in some ways most focused on. You know, the work towards the community engagement plan is a huge piece of that. Police Chief O'Day has said, you know, we need to ask ourselves the questions, what do we want the police bureau to look like, and what do we want the relationship between the community and the police bureau to look like? So that's what we're, through talking to the community and getting as much information as we can, we're trying to figure out how we answer those questions.
Great. And Jimmy, as a community member, share something about your interests, how you became involved, and what do you see as your personal goals, but also what would you know as evidence that your work is succeeding?
Well, first of all, I came involved with the Committee Oversight Advisory Board just through going through community meetings and talking with people in the community. There was some folk asking who would be interested in working with the Community Oversight Advisory Board. And I have always had interest in working with Portland Police Bureau and the City of Portland to really increase relations with the different communities that they put police. So when I had the chance to become involved, I said, yeah, I volunteered to be a part of this part of the settlement plan, and was selected as one of the community members to be involved in the process. And one of the things is just what I would like to see, and I think that we will be moving toward, is better police-community relations. And that's where the community engagement outreach plan, or the, as they said in the settlement agreement, the CEO plan comes into play. Is to, for us, our group is concerned, is to have better police community relations, and then there's some things we want to do to ensure those relations get better or continue to be better where they already are better. So again, just community relations with the police, and one thing I like, and this goes way back to the 90s, even the early 2000s, when Charles Moose was the police chief. He was implementing community policing as one of his big pushes. And I'm from that old school part too with the community policing, and I would like to see us, PPB, go back into that direction more fully and more. We get more engaged in that process. And I know there are some things they're doing toward that that area of community policing, but I like to see it enhanced in a lot of ways. And this piece actually is kind of an overview or overall part. It's not in the settlement agreement per se, but it is an overall piece to achieve the goals of the settlement agreement for as police community relations go and moving forward. And that's what we're at right now. Okay. Our community engagement outreach piece, we meet on a monthly basis, sometimes twice a month, but we're always looking for a community involvement and community members to become involved and engage in our subcommittee. So with that being said, we like to look at people out there right now who may be interested in being involved in our subcommittee to maybe get in touch with the CHOP and the COAP.
Okay, but thank you so much. And let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO-FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with members and representatives of the Community Oversight Advisory Board. And our numbers are 503-231-8187, but we're not taking calls right yet in a few minutes. If someone wants to become involved, how do they do so? You can go to your website, which is at?
It is cocl-coab.org, so cocl-coab.org. I would say the best way to get involved is to start attending one of the subcommittee meetings. There's a calendar on the website. We have the community engagement subcommittee. There's one focused on mental health crisis response. So there's a lot of conversation there about how can the police best interact with people who are in the middle of a mental health crisis. There's a committee focused on data systems and use of force. They're spending a lot of time looking at revised police policies and providing additional comment from the community on what the community would like to see reflected in those policies. And then there's a brand new accountability subcommittee, which will be doing something similar in terms of commenting on policies, but they'll be focused on ones related to the accountability systems. They'll be looking at IPR, the Independent Police Review, the Community Police Relations Committee, Citizens Review Committee. There are a lot of committees involved in police accountability in Portland in this group. New committee will be trying to untangle that a little bit and make it... when they meet, they'll determine their goals, but I think one of the goals is to make that system user-friendly for citizens of Portland. Yes. If people attend subcommittees, there's an opportunity to become a member after attending for a while and getting a feel for it and seeing if it's the right fit for you. You can talk to the chair about becoming a member. But really, even if you're not a member, there's an opportunity for public comment at every one of those meetings. There's the big monthly meeting every second Thursday. We're usually at PCC Cascade. But double check the calendar just to be sure. But there's, and then there are town halls every quarter where people can comment on the compliance report, the quarterly compliance report. And finally, we'll be having meetings, and we'll make sure these are up on the website as well, more specific to that community engagement plan in January, so folks can have their say on what the community wants to see in that plan.
Jimmy made reference to former police chiefs up here in Portland in the 90s, and perhaps you, Kathleen, who you have a long history here in Portland, through several city administrations and all. Why do you think yet this step or this movement will bring some sense of satisfaction that real transformation can take place? We've heard of community policing for decades now, mm-hmm. and you know, go through a cycle of police chiefs and mayors and people protesting. What do you see as a way in which you will know that this is successful, and what is different about where we are as a city now than in the past?
I want to say again, the protests have been necessary and needed. So I don't want to. They may not stop for a while. Where we are is. At this juncture, where we are is we have involvement, requested and formalized involvement of citizens in the process of developing policy. The settlement agreement is not everything everybody wanted, and it's not going to cure, implementation is not going to cure all ills. But it is a way to begin the process of greater involvement of the people who are policed by the Portland Police Bureau. So how I will know that things have changed is to see some of the concepts or wording or direction changes that have come from the community, to see them implemented into whatever comes out. Now, they may not come out in the same words as they went in, but if the impact on the community is lessened in terms of use of force, because that is the complaint, then that says success to me. What we've had before, from my perspective, is an attempt at community policing that was sort of top-down. And complaints may or may not have been put into a pot where they could be stirred up and reconfigured so that they become the catalyst for policy. Now we have that mechanism that's right there, and it's formalized, and it's required. What we need now is for people to have some belief in the possibilities of that committee and to give us information, give us your thoughts on what'll make it better. And when I see those come out, I'll know it's working.
Excellent. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. My name is Cecil Prescott, and we are here with members of the Community Oversight Advisory Board, which is the result of a settlement agreement between the Department of Justice and the City of Portland. Give us a call if you have questions or concerns. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And good morning, Brian. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, good morning. Hi. I just, it's amazing to me. You guys are sitting there very calmly discussing all this. And, you know, I give you a lot of credit for weeding through the massive amounts of media and paperwork that are probably involved in this. But, you know, I think the point that I'd like to make is this is not an administrative process. This is not a process that should take very long. We're in crisis, and it's all over the country, which doesn't make it okay. And we might be in a little bit less crisis than, say, Missouri, but we are still in crisis. You know, basically, what needs to happen now, right now, today, is our police need to disarm themselves of all their military weapons. They need to stop killing people. And they need to lose a lot of their And since we have so many wonderful officers out there, they need to start policing themselves and, you know, just let go of the bad people who are causing all these problems and stop protecting them. You know, and the bottom line goes like this. I, along with other people, suggested years ago on this on different KBOO radio programs that we should have an advisory committee from somewhere else come in and look at our police department. But Chicago? Really? With all the corruption in the police forces in Chicago, and I suggested somewhere like where policing is working, like Europe, you know, Northern Europe, we need to look at policing practices of other places. We did get an advisory panel from Chicago. Now, as we sit, and one more thing, we sit around and discuss all this ad nauseum for months and years, there's people out there getting abused every day. They're dying. You know, there are people there hasn't been a shooting in a while, but there will be another one. And, you know, and we'll go to the table and discuss this. I don't think it's a crisis time. And I think we've had a long period to discuss this. And I think we need to, as citizens who pay for this service, we need to start taking some action.
Okay.
You guys have a great day.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. He raised several points, and... Mm-hmm.
Brian, first of all, thank you for your comments. And yes, I agree, there is a crisis across the country. I want to clarify something. The Advisory Council is not out of Chicago. The Advisory Council is made up of local people, some of whom are mental health specialists, some of whom are citizens who want to be involved, some are members of groups of people who have mental health issues. So we have quite a varied board. But they live, work, play, worship here in Portland. So the question of what needs to happen, I think, is a really good question. But the next question is, how does that happen? Yes, we need to stop killing people. We need to stop militarizing our police forces, since they are not armies. The question becomes, how do you unravel that? And what will not happen is for everyone to stop doing it tomorrow. That just won't happen. So instead of talking about what needs to happen right now, let's talk about what we're doing right now to make that happen. And this is one of the mechanisms. You can say that the police need to start policing themselves, and I think they will eventually, because I think a lot of the very good police officers will get tired of wearing the brand of bad person simply because they have on the uniform. But I think that will take time. You're talking about cultural change, cultural shifts, all those things take time. And that means years in a lot of cases. If you look at the history of, say, discrimination in any other area, it hasn't stopped overnight because there are people involved and they hold views that we need to work on and to change.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Joanne.
Yes, hello. I appreciate the work you folks are doing. And I'd like to have the ability to support you or help you, but I don't. But here's what I believe and about this. I think you're not going to have your cultural shift or change about the way police behave and treat us in this country until people make the changes in at the police academies all over the country about how they treat and think about people and life. It's and also, you know, I don't believe we have time to wait. A lot of time's been wasted, and a lot of people are being destroyed mentally and physically in this country because of these ongoing abuses by police and the military and that. But anyway, I appreciate the work you're doing, but I think the real work has to be done at the police academies. Thank you for listening.
Jimmy, would you like to respond?
Yeah, I would. And I really agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly that we need to have changes in the police practices and way things have been going over the last, I don't know, several decades. But like you just mentioned, the police academies, training at the police academies, when officers come into the force, we need to create a culture. PPB and other police forces throughout the United States need to create a culture of respect for one another, as well and mostly of respect for the citizens that we protect and serve. So there needs to be change right as soon as a cadet or a prospective police officer walks into the door. He or she need to be ready to understand that while their jobs are highly dangerous jobs, they need to be on top of making sure that they're there to protect and serve the public and create a culture of not covering up for one another if there's been mistakes being made. If there's mistakes been made or certain things have happened where folks have gotten hurt or folks have gotten in situations that calls for investigations over and over and over, there needs to be some kind of venue, and I know there is, but there need to be a quicker venue where we can remove that officer. We can remove officers who are not doing their jobs or who are doing terrible jobs. But as we mentioned earlier, most of the police officers are good police officers and they are doing good jobs, but we need to have a venue where we can remove officers quickly if they're not doing their jobs or if they're out there and they're putting people's lives in danger. So that piece is very important, and I agree with you again. It starts right at the academy. It starts as soon as the person walks into the door and gets sworn in as a police officer.
So it sounds as if I'm hearing, at least among the three of you, of the need of the necessity of certainly a cultural shift, mm-hmm. In terms of the police. And a desire on your part to help make this transition. How is it possible for your small committee to engage in what seems like a monumental task? And I'm not sure whether it's within the purview of your mission. So certainly we all desire a change in way policing is done, but you have a very specified commission, mm-hmm. of looking at the settlement agreement. And the settlement had to do with, in terms of policing, I think there was an emphasis on mental health.
Right.
Say something about that and how that guides your work.
First of all, remembering that people with mental health issues come in all flavors. That's the first important thing to remember. They are of all colors, they're of all sexual orientation and identities and expressions. They are all ages. And that category of people, when we begin to look at changes in policy, that means we have to look at a lot of other things other than just mental illness. And the mental illness case is well made by the number of killings, basically, that have occurred since September of 2006. And over again, James Chassie, Aaron Campbell, Jack Collins, Keaton Otis, Bradley Morgan, Billy Wayne Sims, people you may or may not have heard about, Merrill Hatch, Santiago Cisneros, all these people were diagnosed with mental health issues, and they were killed by the police, which says, gee, we better look at what we're doing here, because we're having a reaction to this group that is not founded in the best interest of the group. It is not protecting and serving that group. And within that group, there are lots of people who are not protected and served. So the question of what this little committee can do, this committee is a start. Like everything else in a democracy, or where you're trying to maintain your democracy, what's important is public participation, participation of those affected by the issue. It's a beginning. It's an opening of a door where doors have been traditionally closed. Yes, thank you, and some things went to the top and some things didn't. The things that went to the top tended to go there because there were people yelling about it. Mm-hmm. The whole discussion about where the change needs to start is there's no one answer to that question. This is one start right here. And if people don't show up and if people don't participate, then what are you complaining about?
Well, let me ask, because I'm sure that, and no, I'm not sure. I suspect that some people might have shown up. Some people might have been turned off from showing up because of what they perceive as the bureaucratic mm-hmm. mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people are very concerned, but this may not be the venue for them to that they feel is most productive.
I understand and empathize and agree. But my point is there's got to be a venue somewhere. Mm-hmm. Everybody can't be on the co-op. Everybody doesn't like reading tons of stuff with little numbers beside it that say 1.1.0 and paragraph A and B and C. Everybody's not cut out for that. But there are other places that one can go. One can go to the Human Rights Commission. One can find out what's going on. Well, how does the IPR work? What's the CRC? What are those committees, and how do they function, and how do they help the well-being of the people who live and work in Portland? I think another piece of that is values. That's the piece that doesn't get discussed very much when we talk about working with the police. What are the values? What are our community values? Value life, yes. All right, then let's talk about that. What we want to have the police to have is a value for human life.
Excellent. Our number is here, 503-231-8187. We're speaking with Amy Ruiz, Kathleen Sadat, and Jimmy Johnson. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Frances.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you.
A couple of questions about the review of police practices, their policies and procedures. But I did want to say that I'm 66 years old, and literally since I turned 21, my entire adult life, I've been witnessing this issue in our city. And that would be now, I've witnessed three generations of our young people being targeted by the police department. And Keaton's murder was not the result of his mental health. It was a result of racial profiling. And that's disappointing to me, because this agreement, although the issues of racial profiling were originally presented, does not include profiling in the agreement with the city. Right. It only deals with mental health. And I understand that at some point, if the police do actually act on this agreement regarding mental health issues, that will rub off as far as how they treat other people. But racial profiling needs to be directly addressed at some point. And I would like committees to recognize that if an individual comes with a complaint that indicates very problematic behavior by individuals in the police department, rather than telling them that we're not dealing with individual complaints, recognize that this may be a symptom of perhaps hundreds of more people having the same issues but being intimidated and not wanting to have, or maybe not having the time to bring their concerns to you, and maybe find a way to investigate this one individual's complaint and find out how many others there actually are. Now, my question regarding the review of practices and procedures, I just have a couple. Now, I'll ask them and you can answer off when I go off here. But I have a question about the use. I don't know if you guys even review this and what you're doing now in their practices and procedures. The use of drug-addicted individuals to be informants and to entrap other people. and also the designation of young people as gang affiliates, although they may never have ever been in a gang or participated in a gang or ever been arrested, but they can be labeled as gang affiliates and put on some secret police list. I don't know if you guys even deal with that. And finally, does this agreement have any discussion of screening and hiring practices that could actually maybe have some real effect on the culture that is prevalent in the police department right now?
Hey,
go ahead and discuss this off the line. Talking about it right now.
Hey, thank you so much, Francis, for raising these concerns, and our guests here are jumping to begin their responses, so go at it.
Yeah, I just want to talk about one of the things you mentioned, the racial profiling, as we like to see it. I will say it loud and clear sometime, driving while black, if you will. I am a black person, been living in Portland most of my life, and you are absolutely on point when you say there has been a lot of things going on that happen, and it happens to happen to a person of color. And for example, as you mentioned, the Otis Keaton incident, and is a tragic incident. I personally do see that as probably him being pulled over because of race, but at the same time, he happened to be having some mental illnesses going on at the same time, which police officers probably didn't know about. But with that being said, when this came all about, far as Community Oversight Advisory Board and the settlement agreement, it came about through mental illness, the abuse of police use of force regarding people with mental illnesses. And as Mr. Dot said earlier, mental illnesses comes in all shapes and forms. But also, this gives the co-op, that's the Community Oversight Advisory Board, a chance to address some of the things you just mentioned, particularly, and I'm dear to my heart, is the racial profiling, as well as the mental illness situations that's been going on here in Portland. So, yeah, we discussed that in our And not cover up for bad policing. But with the mental health agreement, with the settlement agreement, your racial profiling is there, and it's in capital letters. It really is. And I agree with you. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's very important to me. And I think it's very important to a lot of people in the city of Portland.
I just wanted to reiterate, it is called out in the settlement agreement, specific to the work that Jimmy's committee is doing. I think it's in the next 2 months, actually, we're going to have the representatives from the Human Rights Commission come in and talk about the 2009 plan to address racial profiling. And then we'll bring some of that information to the full Community Oversight Board as well. I think what this group's interested in learning is what went into that plan, what's happened with that plan, was it successful? Is there work remaining to be done that we can fold into the community engagement plan? So really get a good check, you know, now that we're 6 years out from that plan, to see where things stand and carry the work forward. To the recruitment and training piece, that's another area that this group is looking at. That's also called out in the settlement agreement, that the COAB should provide information to the Police Bureau on recruitment, selection, training, promotion, and evaluations. Most members of the Community Oversight Board actually went through one-day-long training at the Police Training Academy up on Airport Way. And then they've asked for additional information regarding recruitment and hiring practices. So we'll be having a presentation soon on that so we can dig in and see where is that going well, where could it be improved, and what sort of recommendations would this group like to make.
I wanted to say, too, that the question on individual cases, we listen to people regardless of what. When we have our public comment, they get to put their words out. They get to be heard regardless of whether they're complaining on an individual basis or whether they have some suggestions for policy. The problem is that, and it is a problem in perception of what it is that we do. We can collect the information and we can include as much as we can in terms of shaping policy, but we can't resolve the incident for people. So that expectation has been there since the beginning, that we were the place to come so that we could fix those individual problems. And we do not have that power and authority. Our power and authority is focused on the settlement agreement.
I appreciate you sharing that in terms of identifying your what you do. I think, but also in that response, you reveal something that I think many people feel. There's a sense of, I don't know where to go, which yes. agency to address, IPR, COBA, Human Rights Commission, you know, county commissioners. And so just generally there's that sense of this system is set up and there's no way I can find real change.
Oh, Cecil, you are so right. And I think even the entities that are supposed to take some of this information and massage it into something else useful by the bureaucracy, and you're right, it is bureaucratic. I think that even those entities don't know what each other's doing all the time. And a part of that has to do with communication. Hi, this is what we're doing. And we have a kind of a passive approach sometimes. We're going to put it right here, and if you want it, you need to come and get it. And that's often not how human beings behave. They want something in front of their face. People want to hear about it on the radio. They want to hear it here. They want it on their Facebook page, some kind of way. So we're looking at ways to improve our communication with the communities. And we want a working relationship with all those entities that we've just named that bear some responsibility. And I think with the establishment of the accountability committee, there will certainly be a lot more interaction between us and some of those entities.
Okay. Well, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Michael. Thank you for waiting.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, first of all, I want to just say the police, first of all, is a paramilitary organization. So their culture, in part, emanates from the military, because most of them are ex-military people. So when the police come into the community, they're coming to occupy. Jesse Jackson once said that there's two arenas out here that we deal in. There's a social arena, and there's a political arena. Now, the social arena deals with right and wrong, what's fair and what ain't fair. The political arena doesn't care about that. They're only interested in winning or losing. Now, the police is firmly in the political arena. They don't care about right and wrong. It's about winning. So if you want to deal with the police, in my estimation, then you have to go to the senators, your representatives, people that make laws. And one of the laws right now, the police, if he want to take a vacation, all he got to do is just pop a person, kill him, and now he's on paid vacation. I mean, that's ridiculous. You should get rid of that right away. One of your guys, I think the lady said, that this is a democracy. We should be able to do that. Ma'am, Martin Luther King explained it. He said, this is not a democracy. It's an experiment. Once the experiment has came to a conclusion, then it becomes implemented. It ain't implemented yet. Last but not least, some guy said self-check. That's like asking Jesse James the self-check Frank James. Anyway, I got to go. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Let's go to let's go to our next caller. Thanks. Thanks, Mike. Edie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for what you're doing. I wasn't able to respectfully accommodate and address some of the things that were said because as I was sitting here waiting to be online, a woman drove up beside me and just crashed her car into the bank, you know, breaking the glass windows and pillars and everything. So I got a little distracted. But what I was going to say is we say the police need to police themselves, and I want to say that the police always are in very many systemized, institutional, gang, interpersonal, and private ways policing themselves. It's just that it's not according to the values and the behaviors and results that I want.
Yes.
It's the sense that we have to all unite the code of blue silence, you know, silence, and give in to the union or whatever it is. And we have to all think that the public is the enemy. They're not paying us enough money. They could shoot us any time. They don't respect us. They don't obey us like they're supposed to. They have stupid rules. We don't like we have to enforce them in the middle. If we're always the enemy, and it's always building up resentment and hostility and paranoia, it's institutionalized to make the very opposite of, hey, we're all in this together, we're all friends and family, we take care of each other, we're loyal to each other, we enjoy helping each other, the mentality that I want. And there's things that we can concretely do to specifically, objectively solve that, and that is to look at, we're going to be looking at hiring and training and all that sort of stuff, but we can just look at the physical location. When they come in, they're looking at the fortress under attack. We can change that at the federal place at Southwest 3rd and Main. It's probably designed to psychologically, constantly make federal employees be paranoid and resentful. Then we can have how they check in, what kind of equipment, whether or not they can bring their private weapons in, what they have to put on. When they're wearing body armor, various degrees or vests, they're always feeling that weight, that itchiness, the stretch, or whatever it is that's telling them, you're in danger, you're in danger, you're in danger. And this armor is not enough to protect you. Be scared. Be alert. Then when they have their roll call and their training, it's all about, you know, these jerks out there, they're no good. And they all know who are the bad cops and the good cops. The system right now is making the bad cops bully the good cops. They're not in Portland police. They're not keeping a record of the good cops and the bad cops after a certain period of time. First of all, it's not even recorded. But then if it is, they start fresh. So there's no reward for being good over a period of time.
Okay.
And so what we can do is institutionalize how we have the talk, and then we can say that you don't bring your private tasers and other guns in, that there is more accountability, and that we're giving the training, and we don't just have two people who are really good at PR, who enjoy the public and are enjoyed by the public, but have everyone get that joy, get that training, have the physical location be a place that's welcoming to the public, where they can, and part of your job is requiring you to, you know, not be in a war uniform, but in a friendly, you know, like the old uniform they used to have like 60 years ago. And
okay, Edie.
The target from being a black man, you know, things like that.
Okay, thanks, Edie. You raised several points. Yeah.
I think you should come to a second Thursday community oversight advisory board meeting and say some of those things or watch the work that's being done there. I think your points were well taken. I think the environmental issues are certainly things to be considered. I remember what it felt like to put on the outfit when I went in for the training, and it does change the way that you feel in the world. I'm not sure those things get talked about, and that's a training issue. And we're back to training as one of the most important aspects of this, selection and hiring, and then training, because the training is where the individual officer becomes acculturated. That is where the established culture is infused into the human being. And I think it's very hard to resist at that level. So we have to both change perhaps the what people are trained for, but also there is a question about the delivery of that training. The question of whether there are any trainers who kind of wink at some aspects and let it slide or imply that it's not important. But we have to keep infusing the community values, and we need the community to keep saying what those values are. And you just did. Thank you.
Let's see if we can get to our last caller, and I want a few minutes for us to summarize. Good morning, James. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, thank you. I totally agree about the training. And, you know, and I make this comparison a lot when I talk about the police force, in that, you see, I worked as a care provider, in-home care, group home care, for over 10 years. And whenever a care provider who is in charge of the welfare, well-being of the clients did something to violate that, I mean, there's no paid leave, there's nothing. You're put under investigation, and if you're found guilty, then you lose the ability to take care of people. Simple as that. And that's what I find with a lot of these police officers, because a lot of these police officers who do bad stuff to people, it is not their first time. And they're able to slide in and out of the system for whatever reason, and there's no accountability for them. And I think that's one thing to consider, but the other part of it to consider is that the people who are doing the training, you know, there's a lot of institutionalized racism in the police force. I think that is something that's already been well established, but I think more importantly is that you've got the same guys training year after year after year, and, you know, some of these guys just get burnt out, and, you know, the police force is terribly underpaid. You know, as far as I know, just from the few cops that I know, they don't get paid very well at all, and they're worked to death. So you got a combination of institutionalized racism, overworking, and, you know, just people who are just plain straight up getting burnt out.
Sure.
You know, but they still walk around with the badge on. And at the end of the day, you meet somebody who's burnt out with their job with somebody who's angry about how well they're doing their job. And then, you know, couple that with all the racial nuances, and you got yourself a pretty explosive cocktail there.
Hey, James. And, James, yeah. Thank you. We're running out of time, but
oh,
thank
sorry,
you for sharing. No, don't apologize. Come to a meeting, right?
Right.
Definitely.
So I want to thank you all for coming and participating, and I want you to encourage citizens' participation. So tell us, Amy, perhaps, about how people might become engaged.
Sure. So the website, again, is cocl-coab.org, cocl-coab.org. There you can find out when and where the meetings are. The main meeting is second Thursdays at 5:30 p.m., usually at PCC Cascade in the auditorium. But do check the website. We have moved occasionally. You can also sign up there. If you have email, you can sign up for newsletters where we send out all of the meeting information, so it land right in your inbox. And then there's also a phone number where you could call and talk to Mandy Hood, who's our support specialist, who can answer any questions you might have and find ways for people to get involved.
And what's that phone number?
Ooh, that's a good test.
Some people don't have
1 second,
access.
I will pull it up. It is 503-319-7736.
Thank you. I want to thank all of you for coming. Any last words of encouragement or inspiration?
This will not cure everything, but it will help to make things better. Please come.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy, Jimmy, and Kathleen. You've been listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and we will speak with you on a Monday. Have a good day. Bye.
Let KBOO send you to beautiful Mexico and stay at Casa Tranquila. Or go see a play at Pullman Center Stage with your friends. KBOO's Fall Sweepstakes is currently happening, and these are two of the fabulous prizes that we have in store. For every $15,000 we raise between now and September 9th, we will take one day off our fall membership drive. Other prizes include $500 to Grand Central Bakery and three different prize packs from Evolution Healthcare and Fitness, including altitude training, massage, and acupuncture. Thank you to all the local businesses that have donated prizes for the KBOO Fall Sweepstakes. A donation is not required to be entered. For rules and more info, kboo.fm/2015fallsweeps.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Elephant Revival, Thursday, September 10th at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Elephant Revival is a five-piece band from Colorado that play folk music with gypsy, Celtic, and Americana influences. The show was originally scheduled for Revolution Hall, and all tickets for that show will be honored. Again, that's Elephant Revival, Thursday, September 10th, 10:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information